we welcome back to the program from Boston Sports Journal, our friend Sean McAdam. Hello there, Sean.
Good afternoon, guys. How are you?
Well, you know, we're Red Sox. Well, I'm not. Kerry's not. Kerry's a Yankee fan. There's no dealing with him. But Red Sox fans here, we've gone full circle. Sunday night, it was the end of the world, the worst team in history. Now I'm wondering, when do those playoff tickets go on sale?
Yeah, well, welcome to New England, where any of the sports franchises can give you a case of whiplash in a hurry, right? Kind of like the, if you don't like the weather, just wait 5 minutes. That's kind of, the Red Sox are the sporting equivalent of that, looking absolutely outclassed and pathetic against a bad Orioles team over the weekend, and then somehow giving it pretty good to the defending American League champs 3 in a row, a team, I should mention, that had won 8 straight at Fenway, and I think something like 13 of the last 14 before the series began. So you probably could have gotten pretty good odds in Vegas about a sweep on Monday morning, but here we are.
Yeah, and, you know, it's early. None of it means anything at this point in the season, I'm sure. But at the same time, I'm encouraged by the fact that other than the Garrett Richards outing, the starting pitching has been pretty solid so far.
It really has, and Eovaldi was excellent today, not only giving up just 1 run over 7 innings, but the manner in which he did it, coming off that marathon walk-off win last night where, you know, they had to get 7 innings out of their bullpen, and they're a little short today. So I'm sure the message from Alex Cora to Nate Eovaldi was, hey, we need you to go pretty deep in this one. And he did, and he did it efficiently with 91 pitches over 7 innings. And that's something that Eovaldi has struggled with in the past. In fact, a number of guys on this team have that issue. Eduardo Rodriguez is much the same, where sometimes you look up and he's at, I don't know, you know, closing in on 60 pitches in the third inning or so. And, you know, that means that you're seldom going to get past the fifth or at best sixth inning. But he gave him 7 strong today. And you're right, the Garrett Richards outing was a stinker, but the other 5 games have featured at least competitive starts that give the Red Sox a chance. And that's certainly more than could be said many, many times of the 2020 Red Sox in their rotation.
Yeah, I think I was certainly encouraged, too, by the work of Nick Pivetta. We didn't know quite what to expect, but he looked very solid.
Yeah, the 4 walks are something that probably isn't sustainable for over the long run, but he was able to pitch out of trouble when he did lose the strike zone momentarily and give him 5 strong the other day. So no complaints other than the Richards outing on Sunday so far, 1 time through plus 1.
And we get to see Eduardo Rodriguez make his first start since 2019 tomorrow.
Yeah, not the one he had hoped to be making when spring training began, certainly. He had his eyes on that opening day assignment for the first time. And, you know, for the second year in a row, it kind of got cruelly yanked from him last year under, more serious circumstances, first with the COVID test prior to the start of summer camp, and then things got worse with the diagnosis of the resulting myocarditis. But this time was more of a little bit of a hiccup on a dead arm at the end of spring training. And as it turned out, he'll just miss 6 games, 1 turn through. So I'm sure he'll be pretty amped up tomorrow in Baltimore. That is the team that he originally signed with, that traded him to the Red Sox. And if you look back, his numbers are really good against the Orioles over the course of his career. So that suggests, a pretty good matchup for him, and I'm sure he'll be extra amped up. It'll be the Orioles' home opener. There'll be a big and emotional response, I'm sure, for Trey Mancini, but it'll mean a lot for Eduardo Rodriguez to be out there for the first time in better than 18 or 19 months.
We're talking with Sean McAdam here on Downtown. Well, we knew the Red Sox would have a good offense despite what happened in the first few games with the Orioles. And two of the keys to that we talked about last time you were on the show, and that's the bounce back from Rafael Devers, who Didn't get any hits today, but had a nice night last night. And then J.D. Martinez, who looks like the J.D. Martinez of 2018.
Yeah, I think we still have to see what unfolds with Devers, both defensively and offensively. This is a big year for him. You know, can he finally settle down at third and fix his internal clock so he knows how much time he has to make a throw to first or second, that he doesn't get into some bad habits defensively, and that he becomes, frankly, more reliable over there. I don't think there's a whole lot to worry about offensively, although he is traditionally a slow starter at the plate. But you're right, a couple of hits last night, including one against a lefty, that surely is a good sign. But other than the pitching, the starting pitching, which we talked about earlier in the segment, I'd say the return of the real J.D. Martinez is probably the big storyline here through six games, because he was not himself last year. I mean, he had I had to look two or three times to double check the number. He had a slugging percentage under 400 last year. Wow. That's hard to do in the big leagues, and it's almost unbelievable that it came from a guy who has been, you know, one of the handful of best production hitters in the game over the last 5 or 6 years. Maybe even a little longer. So all the things that he talked about being negative factors for him last year, the big gap between the two spring training sessions, the inability to rely on video in-game, you know, they sounded kind of whiny at the time, and maybe they still do, but whatever it is, he's back in his element, and you can see him again being the hitter that he was for this team in 18 and 19, and that's huge.
You mentioned the defensive struggles early on of Devers. Has there been any thought, any discussion at some point of moving Dahlbeck over to third and putting Devers at first?
Well, I'd say it's an option long-term if they can't get him straightened out. But as I was pointing out to somebody yesterday, okay, you move Dahlbeck over. He's got a plus throwing arm. He's a big guy, but good footwork. He could probably handle third base over there. But what is it in Devers' profile that makes you think he can go over and play first? He's never done it before. You know, you're getting the ball at a different angle, but there could be some issues over there. A first baseman has to be able to throw the ball, not as often as you do at third, but still you have to be able to, you know, make good throws to other bases on force plays, on cutoff. And he's never, you know, handled throws in the dirt before. So a guy who has never played so much as an inning professionally over there is all of a sudden going to be the guy that's handling the ball, you know, maybe more than any other fielder except your catcher. And that's not something that you can ask him to do overnight. So I think if that were a realistic option for them, we would have seen some of Devers at first in spring training to at least get his feet wet there. And the fact that they didn't have him do that suggests that while Dahlbeck may get the occasional game over there, particularly when they're facing a tough lefty, I don't think that they want to have that as a fallback to move Devers over. I think they're committed to making it work, which I get, but it does kind of box them into a corner a little bit when you don't have anywhere else to move him. You can't DH him, at least with Martinez still on the roster. Now, in the event Martinez has a big year and maybe he opts out, or maybe they try to move him with a year to go and you move Devers to the DH then, and maybe Tristan Casas is ready to step in at first and Dahlbeck's over at third. I mean, there are a lot of options on the corner infield spots, but for now it seems like Devers is kind of tethered to third and they've got to figure it out.
Obviously, it was a priority of Heim Bloom to get some roster flexibility. I would think Alex Cora must love having a guy like Verdugo who can play any outfield spot, Kike Hernandez and Marwin Gonzalez who can play so many different positions and play them pretty well.
Yeah, it does give Cora a lot of flexibility. We saw that today where, you know, where Kike ends up starting in center field. And then by the sixth or seventh inning, he's moved into the infield at short. Often, you know, that would be maybe moving him from an outfield spot to second, where he's going to play most of the time. But just having the ability to mix and match, give guys an occasional day of rest. You know, I know it's sort of become trendy around here to mockingly compare the Red Sox to the Rays because Bloom came from there and they traded Mookie because they didn't sign him or didn't want to sign him, and everyone is convinced that there's going to be a $70 million payroll around here before you know it. I think that's actually a lazy take of what Chaim Bloom in this organization means. But I think in this case, there is something to be said for Bloom taking a look at how athletic and flexible his former team has been. I mean, you look at the Rays, you know, whether it's Brasso or Diaz or Lau, or so many guys on that roster can move around and play different positions, particularly at a time when, you know, teams have to protect their pitching staffs. The Red Sox are going with 14 pitchers. That leaves 12 position players, and that means other than your backup catcher, you're starting most games with two extra position players on the bench, and that's it. That doesn't give you a lot of room to move. So the ability to have guys who can play six different positions the way Gonzalez does, seven different positions the way Hernandez does, and other guys that can move around a little bit, really provides you with, you know, it's almost like having an extra guy or two on your bench when you have players who are so versatile.
Now, in the three wins, been a couple of blowouts, and then the all-hands-on-deck game last night. So we really haven't seen an opportunity for a closer to come in. When that opportunity presents itself, who do you think is the ninth-inning guy?
You know, for the longest time, Rich, in spring training, I thought it was going to be Ottavino. I think Barnes has struggled in that role in the past. It seems like, you know, some guys just never make that transition. There's something mental about being the last line of defense, and they don't handle it quite as well. Barnes has been more effective in his career in that high leverage eighth spot than he has in the ninth in a save situation. But the more I watch, and you're right, at this rate, who knows when the first save situation is going to be? They're either behind all game, as they were in the series with Baltimore, or they're, you know, kind of blowing the other team out, as they have a couple of times in the last few days, and you don't have that save spot through six games. But just watching it, I have a feeling now that he's going to go to Barnes as a guy who's been here and maybe deserves that opportunity. I'm not sure what the thinking is. I mean, you know, not to contradict myself, but I think a lot of times, you find closers in the most sometimes unusual circumstances. Remember that Koji Uehara in 2013 was like the fifth guy they tried in that spot that year.
Right.
And he only looked like some reincarnation of Raleigh Fingers, Bruce Sutter, and Dennis Eckersley all wrapped into one for about a season or so. So you never know where that's going to come from, but I just gut feeling now I've changed up, and my expectation is that it's going to be Barnes, which means I'll probably be proven incorrect, and I was right all along before chickening out and changing my mind.
Sean McAdam of Boston Sports Journal. Sean, always great to catch up. Thanks for joining us this afternoon. Appreciate it as always, and we'll talk to you again very soon.
My pleasure. Thanks, Rich.
Check out Sean's work. Worth the subscription just to see what Sean's got for you at bostonsportsjournal.com.